The second layer is of conditioning, social, political, religious, ideological belief systems. Belief systems make you non-communicative. You are a Hindu and I am a Mohammedan. Immediately there is no communication. You are a man, I am a man, there is communication. But you are a communist and I am a fascist, communication stops. All belief systems are destructive to communication. And whole life is nothing but communicating. Communicating with trees, communicating with rivers, communicating with sun and moon, communicating with people and animals. It is communication. Life is communication. Dialogue disappears when you are burdened with belief systems. How can you really be in a dialogue? You are already too full of your ideas and you think they are absolutely true. When you are listening to the other, you are just being polite, otherwise you don't listen. You know what is right. You are simply waiting so that this man finishes and you jump upon him. Yes, there can be a debate and a discussion and argumentation, but there can be no dialogue. Between two beliefs, there is no possibility of dialogue. Beliefs destroy friendship. Beliefs destroy humanity. Beliefs destroy communion. If you really want to see and hear and listen, then you will have to drop all belief systems. You can't be an Hindu and you can't be a Mohammedan, you can't be a Christian. You can't afford these kinds of nonsense. You have to be sensible enough to be without beliefs. Caged in one's own system, you are unavailable and the other is unavailable to you. People are moving like windowless houses. Yes, you come close. Sometimes you clash into each other, but you never meet. Yes, sometimes you touch, but you never meet. You talk, but you never communicate. Everybody is imprisoned into his own conditioning. Everybody is carrying his own prison around him. This has to be dropped. Beliefs create a kind of smugness. And beliefs stop exploration because one becomes afraid. Maybe you come across something which is against your belief, then what? So it will disturb your whole system. It is better not to explore. Remain confined to a dull, dead, defined world. Never go beyond it. It gives you a as if kind of knowledge, as if one knows. You don't know anything. You don't know anything about God, but you have a certain belief about God. You don't know anything about truth, but you have a theory about truth. This as if is very dangerous. This is a kind of hypnotized state of the mind. Male and females all have been conditioned, although in different ways. Because man has been conditioned to be aggressive, to be competitive, to be manipulative, to be egoistic. Man has been prepared for a different kind of work, to be the exploiter and to be the oppressor and to be the master. Women have been given belief systems to be the slaves. They have been taught how to submit. they have been given a very, very small world, the households. Their whole life have been taken away from them. But once the belief system settles in, the woman accepts it and remains confined to it. And the man accepts it and remains confined to it. Men have been taught not to cry. Tears are not manly. So men don't cry. Now what kind of foolishness is this? Crying, weeping, sometimes has such a therapeutic effect. It is needed, it is a must. It unburdens. Man goes on burdening himself because he cannot cry and cannot weep. It is unmanly. And women have been taught to cry and weep. It is perfectly womanly. So to go on crying and weep even where it is not needed. Just a belief system. They use it as a strategy to manipulate. The woman knows through arguments she will not be able to win the husband. But she can cry. And that works. So that becomes her argument. Man is corrupted in one way, he cannot cry. The woman is corrupted in another way. He starts crying, uses crying as a strategy to dominate. Crying becomes political. And when your tears are political, they lose beauty. They are ugly. This second conditioning is one of the most difficult thing to get rid of. It is very complex. You have a certain political ideology, certain religious ideology, and thousands of other things jumbled together in your mind. They have become so much a part of you that you don't think they are separate from you. When you say, I am a Hindu, you don't say that I have a belief called Hinduism. No, you say, I am Hindu. You are identified with Hinduism. If Hinduism is in danger, you think you are in danger. If somebody burns a temple, you think you are in danger. Or somebody burns the Quran and you think you are in danger because you are a Mohammedan. These belief systems have to be dropped. Then understanding arises. Then readiness to explore. Then innocence. Then you are surrounded by a sense of mystery. Ah, wonders. The life is no more a known thing. It is an adventure. It is so mysterious that you can go on exploring, there is no end to it. And you never make any belief. You remain in a state of not knowing. That Sufis insist very much, and so is the insistence of Zen masters. In fact, of all great masters of the world, if they agree on any one thing, that is the state of not knowing. Remain constantly in the state of not knowing. If you happen to know something, don't make a belief out of it. Go on dropping it. Go on throwing it. Don't let it surround you. Otherwise, sooner or later, it will become a hard crust and you will not be available again to life. Remain always childlike. Then communication becomes possible. Then dialogue becomes possible. When two people who are in a state of not knowing talk, there is meeting. They commune. There is nothing to hinder. You will be able to understand me only if you are in a state of not knowing. because I am in that state continuously. With me, communion is possible if you drop your belief systems, otherwise they will hinder the path. Third filter, the third layer is pseudo-reasoning, rationalization, explanations, excuses. All are borrowed. Not a single is your own authentic experience. But they give a kind of satisfaction. You think you are a very rational being. You cannot become rational by accumulating borrowed arguments and proofs. The real reason arises only when you are intelligent. And remember, there is a difference between intellectual and the man whom I call intelligent. The intellectual is hidden behind the pseudo-reasoning. His reason may be very logical, but it can never be reasonable. His reason is just pseudo. It appears like reason. Listen. Others the man was drowning. Help! I can't swim. I can't swim, he cried. I can't either, said the old man sitting on the river bank, chewing tobacco. But I am not hollering about it. Now, perfectly rational. Why you are hollering about it? You don't know swimming, neither do I. So keep quiet. But you are sitting on the bank and he is in the river. The situation is different. The context is different. When Buddha says one thing, you can repeat the same thing, but the context is different. When Muhammad says something, you can repeat exactly the same thing and it will not mean the same thing, because the context is different. And context matters. Not what you say. Not what you say, but who you are. That matters. I use the same words as you use, but they don't mean the same. They can't mean the same. When I utter them, I utter them. When you utter them, you utter them. The words are the same, but because they come from different spaces, they carry different meaning, different connotation, different flavors, different music. Real reason arises only when pseudo-reasoning has been dropped. What is real reason? Carl Jaspers has defined it perfectly. He says, reason is openness. Reason is clarity. Reason is will to unity. Reason uses logic, its methods and categories of understanding, just to transcend them. Reason is ultimate flowering of wisdom. But not reasoning, not pseudo-reasoning. Beware of the pseudo. The pseudo always creates a filter, and the real always becomes the door. The real is always a bridge, and the pseudo is always a block. This third pseudo-reasoning layer is one of the greatest disturbances in your being. Fourth is emotionality, sentimentalism, that is pseudo-feeling, much ado about nothing, much fuss. The female mind is very expert in this. It is kind of empty. It is just on the surface. It is important sympathy. It does not do a thing. If somebody is ill, you sit by the side and you cry. Your crying is not going to help. The house is on fire and you cry. That is not going to help either. This pseudo kind of feeling has to be detected. Otherwise, you will never know what real feeling is. The real feeling is involvement, commitment. It is empathy, not only sympathy. It is action. Whenever you really feel something in your heart, it immediately transforms you. It becomes action. That is the criterion, if your feeling becomes action. If your feeling just remains a feeling, never becomes an action, then no, well, it is pseudo. Then you are deceiving yourself or somebody else. One can never go against one's heart. If you are still going against your own heart, then you must have a pseudo heart, which is a pretender. Just as the third is the field for male expertise, the fourth is the field for female expertise. The fifth is corrupted, poisoned instincts, repression, disfiguration. Gurdjieff used to say that all your centers are overlapping each other, are misplaced, are interfering with each other, trespassing, and you don't know what is what. Each center in its own function is beautiful, but when it starts interfering into somebody else's functioning, then there is great difficulty. Then the whole system goes neurotic. For example, if your sex center functions as a sex center, it is perfectly good, but people have been so much repressing it that the sex center does not exist in many people in their genitals. It has moved into their head. This is what overlapping is. Now they make love through their heads. Hence the so much importance for pornography. Visualization. Even while making love to your woman, you may be thinking of some beautiful actress that you are making love to her. Then suddenly you become interested in making love to your woman. In fact, that woman is non-existential. Your own woman is non-existential. It is a kind of masturbation. You are not making love to her. You are making love to somebody else who is not there. You go on in the head fantasizing. Religious repression has disturbed all your centers. It is very difficult even to see that your centers are separate. And each center functioning in its own field is perfectly right. When it interferes into somebody else's field, then problems arise. Then a confusion of your totality. Then you don't know what is what. Sex can be transformed when it is confined to its own centers. It cannot be transformed from the heads. It has created a pseudo-center in the heads. Your so-called saints are only avoiding the world, are repressed beings. If opportunities are made available to them, they will fall far below than you. They are just somehow holding themselves back because of the fear of hell and the greed for heaven. But whatsoever you have repressed because of fear or greed remains there. And not only remains there, becomes unnatural, perverted, moves into deeper realms of your consciousness and unconsciousness, and then it becomes very difficult to uproot it. Watch and observe. Let the head function as reason. Let the heart function as feeling. Let the sex center function as sex. Let everything function in their own way. Don't allow mechanisms to mix into each other. Otherwise, you will have corrupted instincts. When instinct is natural, untabooed, spontaneous, without any inhibition, there is a clarity in your body, a harmony in your body. There is a humming sound in your organism. The fifth layer is also male expertise. And the sixth is corrupted intuition. There is a phenomenon called intuition of which we have become almost unaware. We don't know that anything like intuition exists, because intuition is the sixth layer. Those five layers are so thick that one never comes to feel the sixth. Intuition is a totally different kind of phenomenon than reason. Reason argues. Reason has a process to reach a conclusion. Intuition jumps. It is a quantum leap. It knows no process. It simply reaches to the conclusion without any process. When reason fails, only intuition can work. And all the great scientists have become aware of it, that all their great discoveries are made not by reason but by intuition. Madame Curie was working for 3 years upon a certain problem and trying to solve it from many directions, and every direction failed. Utterly exhausted, one night she went to sleep and she decided, the incident is almost like Buddha, that night she decided, now it is enough, 3 years I have wasted. It seems to be a futile search. I have to drop it. That night she dropped it, went to sleep. And in the night she went, got up. In sleep she went to her table and wrote the answers. Then went back, fell into sleep. In the morning she could not even remember. But the answer was there on the table, and there was nobody in the room. And even if there was somebody, the answer was not possible. She has been working for 3 years, one of the greatest minds of this age. But there was nobody, and the answer was there. Then she looked more minutely. It was her handwriting. Then suddenly, the dream surfaced. She remembered as if she had seen a dream in the night.
that she is sitting on the table and writing something. Then by and by everything surfaced. He had come to the conclusion from some other doors, which is not reason. It is intuition. We have corrupted intuition. Men's intuition is almost absolutely corrupted. Women's intuition is not so much corrupted. That's why women have something called hunch. Hunch is just a fragment of intuition. They cannot prove it. You are going to take a flight and your woman simply says she is not going, and she will not allow you either to go. She feels as if something is going to happen. Now this is nonsense. You have much work to do, everything is planned, and you have to go, and your woman won't allow. And next day you read in the newspapers, the aeroplane has been hijacked, or fell, and all the passengers died. Now the woman cannot say how she knows. There is no way. Just a hunch, just a feel in the guts. But that too is very corrupted, that's why flesh. When all the five other layers have disappeared and you have dropped the idea, because you have been taught that reason is the only door to reach to any conclusion. When you have dropped this fixation, reason fixation, intuition starts flowering. Then it is not just like a flesh. It is a constantly available source. You can close your eyes and you can go into it. And always you can have the right direction from it. You can always go into your intuition energy and you will always find right advice. That is what in the East they have always been calling the inner guru, your inner master. Once your intuition has started functioning, you need not go and ask any outer guru for any advice. Intuition is in tune with oneself, totally in tune with oneself. And out of that tuning, solutions arise from nowhere. And the seventh and the last layer of falsity is the pseudo-self, ego. Notions of being unique, special, exceptional. Notions of doing one's own thing and not knowing who you are and not knowing what is your thing is. Notions of the ego go on corrupting you. Then you cannot listen to the truth. This is the last layer, a very subtle pseudo-sense of self. These seven broken, then you come to the state of Baka, real individuality. And when you have real individuality, then there is a possibility to have a real non-being. From real individuality, Baka, you can have the jump into Fana. Then you can offer yourself to God. This is the whole process.